Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 514, I'm welcoming to the show Eve Squires from Calm and Bright Sleep Support.
Please don't feel that your baby's sleep is reflective of your quality as a parent. So if you have a poor sleeper, it doesn't mean you're getting it wrong. It probably means you've loved them really hard and been there all the time, and that's hard, but it's incredibly admirable. So never, ever beat yourself up if your baby doesn't sleep. It just means you're a really great mom, not the other way around.
So how this conversation came about is I was on my creative retreat, and one of the moms who goes on that retreat with me is a pediatrician. And she was asking if I had ever done an episode on sleep training, because she said the issue she's noticing with the parents who come in her office is a lot of them are learning about attachment theory, which is great, and they're not wanting to disrupt that attachment process through using cry it out methods. But at the same time, the parents and the infant are both struggling because no one's getting sleep. And she just wondered if I knew of anyone, any resource, any research on how to help babies stay connected to their parents while also training them to sleep. And so when Eve Squires reached out to me, she's a sleep consultant with over 15 years of experience. She's a mum because she is British. She has this approach to helping improve your infant's sleep without resorting to harsh methods. And since this is a very hotly debated topic, I just appreciate Eve's gracious way of dealing with things that can be hard. I feel like she's so kind. And so she's going to help you think through, like, is my baby hungry or has this become a habit? How do you know when your child wakes if they really need to eat? How to structure nap windows and awake time, and how to replace sleep incentives to get this healthy, soothing technique in place. So many other things. I can't wait to connect you with her vast amount of resources. They're linked in the show notes, and also for you to hear what she's going to share. So let's get right to it. Here we go. Eve, welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
Well, it's been a minute since I've had a conversation about sleep, and it can be a controversial topic. And so we always like tiptoe in because I get the angry DMs from all the people. And the reason why I even said yes when you reached out was I was somewhere with a friend who's a pediatrician, and she was feeling the pressure parents are under. They're getting conflicting advice. That's how I felt as a new parent. They're exhausted. And it just feels like the research isn't lining up with the advice that's being given. And she was saying, if someone would just give me a research study to show this way or that way, that'd be super helpful. And we'll talk more about those specifics in a minute. Yeah. But I would love to start, like, introduce us to your family and how you even got into the work of helping parents and their babies.
Oh, thank you so much. And I just want to start by saying, you will not find hear me saying sleep training is the way to go, that you should sleep train your baby or that your baby should sleep. There are no shoulds in the way that we do things. And also, we don't do cry it out, where we leave babies and children to it and they just have to figure it out. We shut the door and see them in the morning. Not that I judge anybody that chooses to do anything, but it's really important that anybody that's listening knows that they will not find any judgment on either way. And I think it's just as important that we don't say you mustn't sleep teach, that we say you mustn't tell people what to do. So you asked me about my story. So I'm a mum of four, blessed with the four most wonderful human beings. Also huge mirrors that hold up in my face and show me all the things I get wrong and all the things I still have to work on and all the shadow work I need to do pretty much daily. And what happened was I was raised, just to give you some context, by very what I would call left-wingy parents. So we had a goat in the garden, mum was barefoot, baby wearing, breastfeeding on demand, she breastfed all four of us. And I needed, in inverted commas, a lot of help with sleep as a child. So I had my hair stroked until I was about five or six, but she had three other younger children after me. So God knows, also being a mum of four under six at one point, how she did that. But she said to me, when I was raising my children and my first child, Tilly, who was 10 months old at the time, I was very much of her ilk of kind of everything on demand. The most important thing is your baby's attachment, which, by the way, I still believe. And what I do is completely hand in hand with that. But to me, I'd heard all this horrendous stuff about controlled crying, cry it out. I didn't like the word sleep training because the word training summed up sort of connotations of control and militia and, power and all those things I didn't feel the need to exert or want to. And so my journey was very much avoiding sleep training because I've heard that it was brutal and neglectful and that you shouldn't do it. If you wanted kids, why would you sleep train them? And kids don't only need you in the day, they need you at night, and you wouldn't cry yourself to sleep. And all these millions of arguments that I'm sure even now you still see sometimes. And so for me, it was absolutely something that I was not going to do. And so I battled on. And through the eyes twitching and the thighs bruising as I walked into door frames and didn't measure things correctly, through the scratching my car because again my brain wasn't working, through the running a tap and forgetting about it with my toddler playing near the pool, to marital huge disconnect. I used to look in the mirror and go, if I had a broken arm and a sling, people would take care of me. They might give me a seat. They might be kind. They might say, do you need something? Can I help you? But nobody can see my brokenness, my devastation. I was at the level of sleep deprivation that was severe and serious to the point where when I reached the 10-month mark, deeply avoiding anything, sleep training y, and actually being really judgmental, if I'm honest, to anyone that I heard of talking about it, I had a little minor car crash with my 10-month-old baby in it, and it was that which made me go, hold on. So I'm doing all of this, avoiding all of this, and sacrificing myself of feeding every night and day on demand, every 2 hours, 1 hour. And my baby's like this big, chunky, gorgeous, fat, happy baby with the most delicious thighs. And I'm thinking, but I could potentially have just injured, or God forbid, something really awful happened to both of us at the expense of avoiding something in order to be calm, patient, and responsive. And I'm none of those things because I'm so exhausted. Is this the way? Is there a way to get better sleep without doing cry it out? And that's when I came up with my own approach, which allowed me to offer as much physical and emotional presence as I felt my child needed, but also to be able to pull back and give the opportunity for her to do something that my midwife had told me from 8 months onwards was perfectly reasonable. And in fact, I realized that every time I rushed in and did the, in my case, breastfeeding, but it could be any of the ings, as I call them. So feeding, spaying, patting, rocking, all the beautiful things we do that are so needed and necessary and beautiful at the beginning that begin to not work anymore. And I did. And within 3 days, she was sleeping 12 hours and I had this huge rush of something. Goodness knows what it was. And it just said, you have to tell people about this. So I took my number to what we call the local health visitor at the time and said, look, this is my number. I was completely so strongly against controlled crying. I found a way to do sleep teaching that means I can still help as much as I need, but without doing the things. Give my number if anyone's struggling and they want help. And I did it voluntarily for 5 years. I would drive around from home to home and then I'd drive back at sunrise and breastfeed my own babies and then carry on. And 5 years later, my husband was going, this is taking a huge amount of time and effort and energy, which is beautiful and wonderful, but have you thought about doing it for a job? And that's when I very tentatively began charging after I'd qualified as a sleep consultant. So that's it. And now, gosh, 15 years on, we've helped over 20,000 families get a full night's sleep, which is such an honor.
Amazing. So much information. I hope you guys caught
I
it that Eve
know.
was saying she was raised by a mom who was meeting needs, which is the attachment cycle, right? Like me learning about
Right.
attachment. I learned about it in grad school, but then I had a
Yeah.
guest come on after my kids were a little bit older, and I was like, oh yeah, attachment. I forgot about that. And
Yeah.
then I have a friend, she's like, well, it's kind of formed by 18 months. And I was like, well, shoot, dang, I hope I did it. But it's basically like meeting the needs and then sending them out to explore. And I think that a lot of times moms miss that piece, the like second half of the attachment cycle, which is it is half. So half of it is allowing your kids to gain the muscles and give them the messages that they're capable in themselves, in their DNA, to solve a lot of these problems or self-soothe or whatever it is, and also be available when there is a need. So then you were doing that, following your mom, but you were so exhausted. And it made me think of this new movie that came out, which I can't say the name of it because it's got a cuss word in it, but it's so well portrayed, a fully exhausted. She chose to leave her work and stay home. She's got a, I think he's 2 and he's still not sleeping through the night. This funny thing is the thing that she finally does to get him to sleep is she gets a doggy bed and they pretend to be dogs and he sleeps in his doggy bed, still in her room. Anyway, but she's like getting sleep finally, and that's just a tiny piece of the movie, but you see her come back to life, and it is such a huge part of our functioning. But I hope you guys heard what Eve was saying is she got in a car accident when her baby was 10 months old, and nothing major, but it's one of those things that caught your attention to realize, what am I sacrificing in the name of these, I would say, maybe ideals or philosophies. And I'm just curious to know, like, it sounds to me you found the blend between the extremes. Do you feel like that's true?
Absolutely. Many parents call us the middle ground, as it were. Although I don't like to think I'm in any way associated with anything that's too harsh. So I don't even want to be halfway towards it. I believe that you don't have to choose between a well-attached and a well-rested baby. I think, in fact, if we want to be need-meeting parents, sleep can't be left out of the equation after the 6-month mark. It's really important. And that's an understatement, you know?
Yeah. And so I want to just get this out of the way because it's the question my friend who's a pediatrician asked. She said, parents come in, they're so exhausted. She said, I would love to see papers, science, data against self-soothing. Mm. So anything that's like, no, self-soothing is not okay, or any evidence that there are attachment issues or abandonment issues. And she would say with cry it out, but you would even say yours is not necessarily cry it out.
Right. I wouldn't call it that because I do believe that cry it out is where you leave them to it and there's no parental input. So we do what we'd call sleep training, control crying. Although again, I don't really like those terms because crying's got nothing to do with it. It may be that your child cries in response to us changing behaviors and patterns that aren't working for them or for us, but it's not part of it at all. It just might be a consequence of making the changes that are needed.
Okay. So you walk in, a mom's exhausted. Where do you start? Like, what's your process?
The first thing we do is understand the mom, because I might know that all I've got to do is tell you to do X, Y, Z, and you'll do it. And I know that within about 3 days to 2 weeks, you're going to have a baby that's sleeping 12 hours. That's not enough for us, because actually we look really holistically at this parent, this mom, this dad, this carer, and we say, what's your story? How was your childhood? How was your birth? How was your journey to conception? Do you have a parent around as you parent? You know, these are all really important factors that inform how we feel about protest and upset. And if ever we have experienced neglect, which, and who hasn't to some degree, right? Or needs unmet. And again, show me somebody who's had every need met at every stage, goodness. Then it may well impact how you feel about crying. I helped a very, very close friend of mine who had had quite a long journey to conception and didn't have her own mother with her through the period of conception and birth and post-birth. And I helped her knowing that this would mean that it would be more difficult to do any kind of sleep training. So we did it gently. So the first thing is to understand them and also to understand what their goals are, because what's the point of me going in and saying, right, we're going to remove all night feeds, we're going to do every nap in the cot, if they're like, I don't feel the need to get rid of all the night feeds, and I'd quite like them to sleep on me from time to time. And, you know, so we ask what they want to keep as well. That's really important, and what they want to change. And the magic question that I love asking is, if you had a magic wand and sleep could look however you wanted it to, what would it look like? Would it be 7 to 7, or would it be? And then they get to dream and hope, and that's when we can talk about it. I think also to touch on your question about these studies, we can go into it in more detail, but the crux line is that the reason why there aren't, can say to someone, please can you show me the studies, but the reason why they struggle is because there actually aren't any studies to show that sleep training is harmful. And if we think about it for a minute logically, would diplomatic free countries such as the United States of America and the UK, would we really have companies that can practice something that is known and proven to be harmful and neglectful and cruel to babies? No, we would. That wouldn't be the case. So it's not proven. And I do know where it comes from, but you know, it's a big topic, like you say.
Well, you mentioned before we got on that there was a study a long time ago, but the context is so drastically different from the majority of women who are reaching out to you that it's not a study that's applicable.
No.
Because you're not, it's not apples to apples.
Right. That's it. Yeah. I mean, there were studies into a group of children who tragically were orphaned in 1990s Romania due to basically a policy of the government of the dictator Nicol Ceaușescu, and he decided that mum should have 10 babies. Can you imagine? And you got a heroic mother award if you'd had that many, so that they could ultimately get, you know, the good old adages of greed and power and money and control. And as a result, so many children were orphaned throughout 1990s Romania, and we won't go into it because it's too troubling, but the treatment was awful. And as a result of that, and not just bad treatment, but actual abuse as well as neglect, so two very different things, and being separated from a parent, your home, so those three hugely traumatic life-changing things, those children weren't ever attended to, and they did stop crying. So this is the critical thing to know, is that whilst that's absolutely abhorrent and not surprising that they had impacts on their physical and mental health and their sense of the world and relationship, but also they were deeply impacted. But this is what is referred to when we say, when you hear people talking about learned helplessness, as in they stop crying because no one will come, they're referencing studies into these orphans that were neglected and abused. That is completely incomparable to a few days of responsive sleep teaching where you're not leaving them to it, you're not abusing them, you're not, you know, they have a full belly, a warm bed, loving parents, responsivity in the day and the night. So it's apples for apples is what it isn't, you're right.
And I think that's helpful because I know for me as a mom, and I think this is true for young moms, you start believing like, well, if I don't respond, they'll stop asking for help because that's what you've been told. And you're saying that's not true because you're providing the messaging a majority of the time, and even in this training, you're providing the messaging that you're available.
Absolutely. I can tell you from my own four children, but also from the 20,000 plus families, that trust me, when they're teething or they've hurt themselves or the storm wakes them or the fireworks go off or the dog barks or the postman rings, they'll let you know when something is not right. And so the signaling thing is completely untrue. I'd love a study into that, but I have a lot of anecdotal evidence, a lot of evidence in the last decade and a half that no, that's not the case. And I understand, by the way,
we need you to do a study.
Fear. Yeah, I know.
Come on, Eve, next level.
I was just thinking that.
20,000, that's, I mean, even if you did retrospective, like, where are they now? That's like hugely insightful. Write an article. I mean, the pediatricians here would appreciate it for sure.
You know, talking about it, just on my four, and I know this is a terribly small pool of evidence, and they're all so completely different.
Small sample size, yes.
Yeah, very tiny. But, you know, when we go out to an airport or a shopping center, which I must say is very rare nowadays because they're all getting older, and as you may know, they don't always want to be around you all of the time. But when we are traveling or doing something together as a family, I do genuinely get stopped a great deal of time, and they say, what is your secret? These children are kind, they're considerate, and don't get me wrong, they're not always, but they do have big hearts. They do look out for each other. If there's an old lady struggling with a bag or an old man, they'll be the ones to say, can I help you? And my answer is always compassion and sleep, like the kindness and the sleep. They're my two superpowers when it comes to why my kids are the way they are. So tiny pool of evidence, but my own personal one is lovely to have.
Well, and you seem to be very lovely too. So
thank
that's
you.
Helpful.
Not too bad yourself as well.
Well, mine are not as kind as yours, like helping the old lady. Okay, so you've asked the mom what her goals are. You've gotten a bit of her story, and I think that's so huge of the why behind. I mean, that's just the constant of motherhood is what narrative are we telling ourselves? What are we compensating for? What are we, you know, parenting from? And and then you come in, what's the secret? Are you going to give it away, or we got to pay money for that?
I'm going to tell you what it is. If okay. they want, absolutely. It's not, to be honest, it's not a secret. And this is what I say to people. That's why we give so much free advice away all the time. If you have a look on our Instagram page, so many people message us and say, we didn't need to buy anything. We just figured it out from what you're saying. And that is great to us. It might not be the best business sense, but who cares? We're here to make a difference. So it is so simple and easy. And sometimes when you're in the thick of a really what feels like and is overwhelming, complex, just mind-bogglingly difficult situation, you kind of expect that the solution has to be really complex, really layered, really overwhelming. And actually, sometimes the parents I speak to are offended when I tell them how simple it is, because they're like, wait, it's almost hurt to the ego, because if it's that easy, why am I struggling for like months, weeks, years and everything? And I have to help them with that sometimes, because it doesn't really matter how simple it is. If it works, it works, right? Who cares? It doesn't matter if it's a 400 page book or a four paragraphs.
But I can get that. Like if it's,
yeah,
if you tell me it's super complicated, that's why I could never figure it out.
Right, exactly, right. Which yeah. justifies it. It's like the cognitive dissonance thing. And I have actually had, I do get about 5 people a year that are really so deeply offended and they ask for their money back immediately. They're like, for that? By the way, others will go, this is the most comprehensive, simple, like, but the ones that are offended, it's like, it's an offense because it is that simple. So this is the thing. And this is suitable, this answer for every single sleep problem. So it doesn't matter if it's night wakes, short naps, early starts, dummy dependence, getting out of bed, getting into your bed. It doesn't matter what it is. This is the beauty of this. And I can't take credit. This is just sleep teaching. This is just our take on it, right? Whatever happens when your baby wakes or cuts a nap short, that is the thing that needs to stop.
So you put your baby to bed and something wakes them
right
up.
So whatever you do to get them to sleep or back to sleep, let's say feeding as an example, that's the most common one. Obviously that's needed pre 6 months, but after that, that's the most common one. What we think we're doing is we think they're waking, so we're feeding them, but it may well be, and it will be beyond 6 months, that they're waking because we're feeding them, which is such a weird, well, I'm encouraging, it's so hard to hear, but the truth is that yes, all we do is we find the incentive. So for an early start, that might mean getting some biscuits or cereal. It might be watching TV at 5 a.m. It might be getting into your bed, which let's face it, is lovely and warm and they're safe. And that's, there's nothing wrong with any of those things, but we find the incentive for the sleep issue and we remove it and replace it with a different kind of comfort. And it's gone as long as we stick to it. It's as simple as that. Yeah, it's mind-blowingly simple, but so free.
And that's going to be hard. Like, okay, so let's take the one, because that's the DMs I've gotten where yeah. they're totally fine with their babies in their bed.
Yes.
So if you have right. that mom.
Right. So first of all, I would say to them, do you want your baby to stay in your bed? If they say, yeah, do you know what? It's my last baby, or this baby was really difficult to conceive. Do you know what I'd say to them? Don't change a thing. Keep them in your bed, hold them tight, and as long as it's serving you and as long as you're getting the rest you need and they are, don't change anything. So I talk people out of doing this all the time, because some of them just do it because their mother-in-law said they should, and I'm like, that is really not a good reason to sleep train. You should only ever sleep train, and I'm not saying it's a last resort, because it isn't, it's a wonderful choice, but you should only ever do it if sleep is not working for you, your baby, or your family. And that's the, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, we would say here.
So if it's the mother-in-law, do you think it's like the husband's like, I want this baby out of my bed, or I want this child out of the bed. And the mom's like, nope, works for me. So then you're in like a marital.
Yes, you joke, but I actually co-slept with my now 11-year-old from the age of, I think like 4 to 9. And my marriage was breaking down. So sadly, my 21-year marriage with the father of my 4 children did not work out despite years of huge efforts. And to touch on that personally, I subconsciously knew that when she was in my bed, he wasn't. And that protected me. I don't mean physically, I mean emotionally. It protected me and kept me being needed there, so I didn't have to be needed elsewhere. So I do think there are very often quite deep underlying motivations when it comes to our sleep choices. But I would tell that mom not to change a thing. If, however, she said to me, they're in my bed and I'm exhausted and I'm trying to have another baby, or I need to go back to work, or my kid is knackered and not making friends, or their immunity's bad, or they're not separating from me happily at nursery, other than the normal obviously separation anxiety is that. I'd say, okay, what do you want to do? And they might say, well, I don't mind if they get in at first, but not. And then we would just work it out, and we would basically lead them back to bed, but we'd spend quality time with them. We'd explain to them. It's all sorts of things we could do to fulfill that child with confidence.
So when you say quality time, do you mean in the night, or you're saying quality
no,
time during the
we
day?
We do it in the day. I maintain that healthy children above the age of 6 to 8 months, and that goes right up to teens, that their greatest need in the night is sleep, unless they're unwell or afraid or, you know, night terrors or something. Then, of course, they need our input and help. But other than that, the greatest need they have is sleep. So we need to do all we can to get it for them to be as solid as possible.
That's a really good – I hope everyone's listening and hearing that. So if they're healthy, which is a huge part, which we could even talk about that, the babies who are – do you guys call it the NICU? The neonatal?
Okay. Yeah.
So babies maybe from the NICU, or again, that goes into that first interview you have with the mom.
Yes.
Or any babies with kind of more complex health issues. Yes. I could see where this is really hard for moms. But if the baby's healthy, the only need they have – at night is sleep.
Yes.
The best attachment work then, if we're going to keep with that, because I know attachment is so prevalent right now in the conversation, is to meet that need.
Right.
And to get them to sleep. And sometimes our incentives for sleep are working against us.
You've got it. You should write a book on this, not me.
I'm just trying to break it down so people, because sometimes if we say it so quickly, it doesn't get in.
I love that.
But it feels like I can understand there were some of mine that they would wake up, and the best way to get them to sleep was to bring them into bed with me.
Yes. Yes.
For others, the way to get them to sleep was to put a pacifier in. Then the pacifier would fall out, and I put the pacifier back in. So let's say with the pacifier. The pacifier is what's helping. You guys call it a dummy, which is real neat. When my sister-in-law was like, why are you giving them the dummy? I'm like, you're rude. It's not a dummy. Is the pacifier is like they're swaddled. I don't even know what your thoughts are on swaddling, but let's say they're swaddled, put the pacifier in, they go right to sleep. And they wake up and they need the pacifier. So talk a mom through that.
Okay, so there is nothing wrong with a pacifier at all. In fact, it's a safe sleep tool pre-6 months, we know. And what it does is it basically, as we know, replaces the nipple or the teat, which is great. However, if we are needed to put it back in all these times in the night, then it stops serving its purpose because it was replacing us needing to do it, but we're needing to do it anyway, right? So again, back to if it's working for you, it's working. If it's not working, get rid of it using, you know, some sleep teaching where we replace comfort than the dummy or the pacifier. What I would say is that you don't sometimes don't have to choose. So I want to give a really practical tip, if that's okay now, for parents who do have a child with a dummy. So from age, I would say 7 months onwards, never again put the dummy into your baby's mouth. Get your the dummy, the pacifier, put it into their hand, and then guide their hand to their mouth. And what that'll do is that will teach them to learn to source it. And then at night, you do what we call a rainbow of dummies. So you've got like 5 or so dummies around the head, and they genuinely will, within a few days, learn to source it for themselves. And just while I'm on the topic, if you're finding that dummies or pacifiers are becoming a problem and the lines are getting a bit blurred with when they do and don't have them, a lovely way to start cutting down the use, if it's not working for you or your toddler or your baby, is to just the second they get up out of that bed, you pop it under the pillow if you've got one. And whenever they ask for it, you say, yeah, that's fine. Let's go and get into the cot. And they'll be like, they might go in there and suck for 2 seconds, then they want to go out and play. So you're giving the really clear message that, yeah, you can have it, but it's for sleep. So that can be really helpful too.
It was like a connection point that it's not just for soothing all throughout the day.
Right.
It's for nighttime. I think that's very interesting. So when you're saying that, then their hands are free, so they're not swaddled. So swaddling could be another thing that's that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they wouldn't be able to source that, I'd say, not before kind of 7 months of age. So that would be when we'd be thinking about getting out of the swaddle anyway. I know everyone's different, but there's no right on that, by the way. It's whenever you feel it's becoming more of a, you know, restrictive than helpful.
Yeah. The sleep sacks were really helpful by the time I got to my third and fourth.
Same. And putting them on backwards when they started taking them off, I would put the zip at the back. That was a good one too.
So my ones that were more dependent on the dummy, the pacifier, the ones who required more of an external soothing regulation are also the ones that I've told you we've had EEGs and their neurology, both of them have struggled with emotional regulation in general across the board. You know, it gets better as neurology develops. So what advice do you give parents? Like, they're not going to know that. I didn't know when they were babies why one slept well and one didn't. Mm-hmm. But that might be a sign that there might be some neurological challenges. Yeah.
Yes. In our experience, out of 100 babies, we might find one or two. It's that little that might not quite take to it as we hoped. But we would just say to them, get straight in touch. If it's not, so we tell families, if it's going to work, you're going to literally see the timings nearly halve. So say you have 40 minutes of them being a bit grumbly and trying to work it out. I would expect that the very next time you do it, as in that day, so say that's nap one, for nap two, I'd expect it to be like 20 minutes. And then the bedtime, I'd expect to be 10. So we want to see it halving pretty much. And also the intensity of crying, you know, if they're really quite fed up at the beginning, we would want to see that lessening like instantly, like across 24, 48 hours, we want it to be reducing. So if ever it doesn't, we have sort of little signposts for people to get straight in touch with us so we can have a look and go, okay, what else might be going on here? And that's what we do. So we would not persist unless we were getting immediate return on investments. And you're right, that can be one of the things. But I would also say that we've also help sleep train a number of babies that are neuro spicy, as I like to call it, neurodiverse, but I've had some neuro spicy children. I'm a bit neuro spicy and they're all really fantastic sleepers. So it doesn't mean that they can't, but an understanding about it might well help work out how we do it.
Neuro spicy. I like that. I like that. No, I mean, with our oldest, it would be like instructions to the babysitter once he's totally asleep. And he had some reflux too, a lot of you know, pain, like when he would lay flat, awesome. It was like pain. Anyway, lots of fun. So if it's your child and you've tried this and it's not working, yes, reach out to Eve and get some special advice. I heard you say like 40 minutes and then it should half. So in that 40 minutes, talk me through, what are we doing? Because it sounded like you were just saying you cry it out.
No. So you can choose. So in our sleep plans, you've got different approaches. And so you go, right, I'm a really attachment-y parent. I don't care if it takes a month or 3 weeks or 2 weeks. I want to go slowly and gently. Or you might go, you know what? And that would be the scenic route, what we would call. Somebody else might go, I'm going to use the fast track. I want it done within 3 days. And yeah, there might be a bit more upset, but less in the long run because I'm done in 3 days. Either way, you're never ever away from your baby more than a few minutes at a time. But it would be perhaps going in and out. Some people would choose to stay in. Some people would choose, but you would never be away. Even in our least input-y method, you're never away more than a few minutes at a time. And then you would say through your visits and you'd be physically and emotionally present and go, I love you. I'm going to show you that you can do this through me enabling you to do it with my love and support, but I'm not going to do what I was doing before because it's not working for any of us. So it's basically about sticking to what you've chosen, which would be to remove the ings, as we call them, if that's what your choice is, but not immediately. So with breastfeeding, you couldn't go from 5 feeds to none. So we would help you to gradually do that because we would, goodness, hate for people to have mastitis or something. And we're a team of nurses and midwives as well. So we do understand all of that too.
Yeah. So if one of the ings was your feeding,
right,
you're saying like you're not cutting off feeding altogether. No. It's like this gradual reduction so that your body can adjust and their bodies can adjust. Yeah. And they'll compensate, right? Like, won't they eat more on the other feeds? Yeah.
Right. Okay. So people that have babies and children that are feeding beyond sort of 8 months of age, again, there's nothing wrong with it in case people are just getting a segment of this chat. But you may well find one that the sleep is broken and not what it could be, which is 11, 12 solid hours from 6 to 8 months. But also, like you say, that breakfast can be impacted. So very often the nutritional intake is undermined when they're feeding through the night. So a really good way to start to space out feeds is to go, I know that newborn regularity of feeding is 1 to 3 hours. So I'm going to start small because this is scary. I mean, at the moment, my baby's feeding every 1 to 2 hours. So even though they're nearly half a year old or nearly a year old, I'm going to start with something that feels safe. So I'm going to say 4 hours 4 hours after being fed, I'm not going to feed. I'm going to offer comfort in a different way. And then if they wake after the 4 hour period, then I'm going to feed. And then that naturally will just probably drop off about one feed a night gently. And just being confident, I think, is the biggest thing, that there is no evidence that this is harmful. In fact, there's loads of evidence that it's safe, effective, and deeply beneficial. Also, lots of evidence into the link between maternal depression and sleep, mental health in our teens. Toddlers and babies need sleep just as much as we do. It is a critical thing. So actually, I would argue that, you know, having the confidence that what you're doing is attachment enhancing, is healthy and safe, that's probably the mindset, I would say, is the biggest factor in success. If I get a parent that comes to me and says, I don't want to do it, I'm scared, it's not going to work, I say, please don't do it. You're right. It's not going to work because you're not there. And that's okay. Timing's everything, really, you know?
It is 100% us telling ourselves, I'm harming my baby, X, Y, and Z, for this reason.
Who would want to do that as well?
Yeah, no, that's, I think that you're right. Their desire and their love and their care is sabotaging the very thing that they want. And the lack of sleep for themselves and their baby is actually, the studies have shown, more harmful than what they think. They think, oh, I've got to feed my baby. They're not getting enough. And there may, you know, I don't know what I haven't done the research on feeding to know, like, I'm guessing if you're bottle feeding, you can better track. And I think for me, the hard part when I was breastfeeding was like, well, what if they're not getting enough?
Right.
And they're starving.
That's huge. That's huge. But we know, don't we, that if they're growing out of clothes and their nappies are wet and soiled, we know they're getting enough. But we didn't know that. I didn't know that. That's the biggest question. And people have this myth that formula fed babies sleep better because of the content of the milk. It's not at all. It's that if you gave your baby a bottle an hour ago, you're not going to give them another one because you know it's not hunger. So the hunger versus habit question is really big. And how parents can know if it's habit is if, well, one, they probably just know if they just ask themselves and they sit down and go, is it? But exhaustion clouds us so much. But it's, are they doing a kind of token and then drifting back off? Is their breakfast being impaired the next day, or their lunch? Like, are they not taking as much as perhaps their peers? Are they seeming tired? Like, it might sound really obvious, but, you know, babies aren't supposed to look shattered. So, I mean, above 6 months. So if they literally have grey under their eyes and they're like, oh, and, you know, always having a runny nose, then they might not be getting the sleep that they need for their immunity. We know that it's a big factor in how children respond to vaccinations, if, you know, if they have them, that we know that they don't respond as well if, you know, if they're exhausted, just like us as well, and our immune systems are stronger when they're rested. So,
well, and it's important too to research, and y'all can look this up, we don't need to go into it, but look up the normal, as children develop, total hours, nap time hours. And yes. I mean, I think another big sign is if their afternoon nap is really, really, really long.
Yes,
they'll make up for it.
Yes.
Great nighttime sleepers may not be the best daytime nappers.
Right.
I mean, as far as best, like, you're getting these big breaks, but you're getting sleep at night. So anyway, these are all factors. Is there anything else you want to share with everybody before we go, which is sad we have to go. But I feel like, you know, your technique, is there something that you didn't get to share that you want to make sure you say?
I'd love to give them another practical bit of advice, which is that day sleep is super critical to night sleep. And please don't feel that your baby's sleep is reflective of your quality as a parent. So if you have a poor sleeper, it doesn't mean you're getting it wrong. It probably means you've loved them really hard and been there all the time. And that's hard, but it's incredibly admirable. So never, ever beat yourself up if your baby doesn't sleep. It just means you're a really great mum, not the other way around. That's the first thing I want to say. And the second thing is, this practical bit of advice is, for the first year, a really lovely tool for the nap gap, as I call it, which I think you guys might call the wake window, so the time between naps. That's a really big part of getting the night right. And so in the first month of life, so 4 weeks, the nap gap is 45 minutes. And every single month for the first year, it increases by 15 minutes. So at 2 months,
or 15?
Yeah, 15, 1-5. Okay. So at 2 months of age, you're looking at an hour, and 3 months of age, an hour and 15. So 6 months is a 2 hour window. Okay. Which means in that time when your baby's 6 months, you want to have fed and changed and everything. They're asleep by 2 hours. So you're actually putting them in their cot at like 1 hour 45. So many babies that struggle with sleep are really exhausted because they're trying for sleep about 2.5 hours later, whereas they kind of needed to be asleep before. So I would say use that nap gap tool to kind of give it a go. Feed before a nap. That is so big. We try to separate feeding from sleep because we've heard it's bad and they'll get reliant. Actually, we don't need to separate it that far. Full bellies are great before sleep.
So how much time before? Because you don't want to feed... You don't want to feed that leads them to falling asleep. Like they're falling asleep on you or on, with the bottle in their mouth, but you're feeding close. It's like I used to hear when they wake up, you feed them and then they're awake that whole time.
Me too.
And then when they start doing the three yawns, it's time to put them in the.
Yes.
But you're saying no.
The trouble with that is that let's say you fed them when they woke up and say in 2 hours, they're tired. In another hour, they're going to be hungry again. So their hunger is going to shorten their nap, and we don't want that ever happening. Also, you know how when you have a really nice meal, let's say the Christmas or Thanksgiving dinner, don't you feel really tired afterwards? It's because we're digesting food. So when we're digesting stuff, it really goes hand in hand with good sleep. So we say to feed right before. Obviously, for babies that have reflux or colic, you're going to need to give a bit of time of upright. But otherwise, literally right before, as long as not too sleep, and that will give you the best possible chance at a lovely long nap.
So then if that's true, when they wake up, what is the routine?
You could literally give them a top-up feed or not. It's up to you. You can work it out based on – and also you can go between snack and food and milk as well, of course. So from like 6, 8 months when we're doing sleep teaching, they might have a little bit of something solid as well. So you could do that when they wake up, for example, when they're a little
bit older. Give them a little something.
Yeah.
Change diaper, playtime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it's the feed and then it's another
baby. I would do it the minute they show you they're tired. I'd be like, let's go. And using those nap gaps alone can genuinely make a difference to sleep. And we're here. We're in the inbox. If anybody, I know we're in England, but we do operate, you know, please just message us because there's so much kindness to come your way if you need it. It's so hard being tired.
So many different sleep plans. They even have a self-assessment. I'm going to click on your link. Our plans, they have for different ages, plans, all the way up to 4 years old. And then they even have one-on-one support that y'all can call. Yeah. They have bespoke. I mean, y'all, so trendy.
Gotta have it.
30-minute one-on-one support, 1 day one-on-one support, 3 day, 5 day. It's all in pounds. How does that translate? Like,
oh gosh, you're gonna have to ask Google that because I'm so bad at maths.
But I mean, if
it would do it, yeah.
The currency exchange would happen automatically.
It would happen. Okay. Yeah, okay. People
must like wait a second. It's in pounds.
I don't know about pounds. That.
I don't have any pounds left. Well, I appreciate you. I thank you for your graciousness and kindness. And I love how you're following the mom's lead on what she's ready for and also providing the support so she doesn't mom alone. And that she can be.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, connect to your baby and get sleep. I love that. So, y'all, go check out calmandbright.co.uk. We'll put all the links in show notes. But thank you, Eve. So good to get to meet you.
Thank you so much to meet you. You take care.
Okay, once again, go check out the show notes for more from Eve. I'm going to pray over us. Lord, I thank you that you have given us the gift of children and that you have wired us all for connection. I pray for the parents who are listening to this that they would feel peace, that they would trust you in this journey, in this process, that they would seek out help where they need it and talk to others, talk to other parents, talk to experts. And Lord, I thank you that you did give us bodies that need rest. And I pray that we would find that whether it is sleep or whether it is breaks or whether it is just taking longer times in the weekend, Lord, that we would rest in you. And I thank you for these babies that are represented by those who are listening. I thank you for their precious lives and the futures that they have. In Jesus' name, amen. If you made it all the way through this and you don't have an infant, do you know someone who does that maybe you could share this episode with? That's really helpful for me. Or if you can post on your socials, Anytime you share the show, I am so thankful. That is the only way I've been able to keep this going, is through y'all sharing with friends, and how any episode helps you and you help that friend, you're helping her not mom alone. And speaking of mom community, next week we'll be releasing an episode with three moms. My first time ever to have three guests, three moms who are all parenting a child who is on the autism spectrum. And I just appreciate their three different experiences and their just encouragement to each of you. So point them on my way if you think that would be helpful for her. All right. Have a great week. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone, because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us, moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.